It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time once again for another edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And I can honestly say that if you're listening to us on the internet, you're not listening to us live because, well, there's quite a story behind this, actually. Today is Tuesday, the 26th day of June in 2007, and it will go down in history as a day of silence, a silent protest, if you will. This has to do with a lot of unfairness in the way online broadcasting is being treated. So basically, what we decided to do here at this radio station was not so much go silent like many other places are doing, but have an announcement play every 4 minutes that will alert people to the situation. And the plan was to have that happening. It's annoying, yeah. It's going to break up what you're listening to, obviously. A little bit better than not hearing anything, I suppose. The idea was to wake people up. And this is happening all over the country. All sorts of online stations and simulcasters are silent today. And the reason for that is to get people's attention. Silence tends to do that. Well, we kind of outsmarted ourselves. Actually, we didn't have anything to do with it. Turns out, after going to all this trouble of getting this thing to play every 4 minutes, the university decided that it was going to, cut itself off from the rest of the world or just break the internet or something like that. So for whatever reason, the stream doesn't work anyway. So it's all a moot point. Doesn't matter. So basically, yeah, it's silent, but it's silent due to incompetence or due to malfunctioning equipment, which is sort of the theme of this place. Not a protest action, I'm sorry to say. But if we did have a working internet stream, we would be protesting on it right now. I promise you that. And of course, there's always a chance that it just came back up while I was saying that, too, and I've made a total fool of myself. But odds are, if you're listening to my voice live, you're listening to it over the radio. Or through some other device, not the internet. If I'm wrong, then I'd like to know about it. We'll be taking phone calls a little bit later on, but I think we'll only be taking phone calls from local people, which is fine with me. That's what radio stations are all about. But the internet has opened up all sorts of doors, and in this day and age where doors are being slammed shut, it's always good to open one occasionally. But let's take a look at what's happening, all right? It's an interesting story, something now that a lot of people aren't even aware of as we blithely go about our daily routines. You can call it The Day the Music Died, Part 2, because today thousands of U.S. webcasters are silent to protest the planned royalty rate increase by the Copyright Royalty Rate Board, another one of these secret organizations that meet late at night with candles and things like that. The Copyright Royalty Rate Board. They have so much power, it's not even funny. Although the situation is nowhere near as devastating as February 3rd, 1959, the day that music really died, that was when Buddy Holly, the Big Bopper, Richie Valens died in the plane crash, U.S. webcasters say the impending royalty rate increase would lead to the virtual shutdown of the country's internet radio industry. And while I hesitate to call it an industry, I prefer to say it's going to massively mess up the art form of broadcasting on the internet, as we're demonstrating today, for different reasons. The arbitrary and drastic rate increases set by the Copyright Royalty Board on March 2nd threaten the very livelihood of thousands of webcasters and their millions of listeners throughout the country. That's according to Jake Ward, a spokesman for the Save Net Radio Coalition, in a prepared statement. The campaign to save Internet radio, a genuine grassroots movement comprised of hundreds of thousands of webcasters, artists, and independent labels, and net radio listeners, has quickly brought this issue to the national forefront and the halls of Congress, but there is still more to be done before the approaching deadline of July 15th. So, it doesn't just affect non-commercial broadcasters like us. There's money to be made here. They say giving up one day of revenue, meaning advertising revenue, is better than closing doors forever. But here at WUSB, we don't really care about that part of it. We care about the fact that as non-commercial broadcasters, we're being faced with massively increasing charges. And charges for what exactly? For playing the music that these corporations are putting out in the first place. Yeah, they send us the CDs, and they say, play these CDs. They don't threaten us. Well, they'd like to threaten us, but we don't listen to them. We play them because we want to play them. But then they charge us. They charge us money to play these things, which are basically advertisements for them, for the entire record industry. And yeah, the artists are great. You know, all kinds of musicians are struggling to make it out there, and non-commercial radio exists to help them to get the word out. But those big, evil corporate record companies that control every single nuance, forever having their hands out and picking our pockets. Well, they want some other way of doing this. And by raising the rates incredibly, they basically make it impossible for stations like ours to continue broadcasting over the internet. Sad but true. Here's a piece from Cicely Mack. It's called A Look at Radio Silence When Copyright Law Reform Goes Terribly Wrong. And this was published yesterday. This Tuesday, June 26, is a day of silence on which webcasters will protest the hike in internet radio royalty rates, scheduled to become effective July 15th, and to apply retroactively. That's right, apply retroactively to January 1st, 2006. So you've got a hefty bill coming if that actually goes through. Webcasters have also asked the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit for an emergency stay of the rates ruling. The webcasters have an excellent point. Instead of increasing rates enough to properly compensate rights holders and encourage creation, the new rates are so unreasonably high that they are threatening the survival of an entire industry. Again, there's that word, but we'll live with it. Unless the new regulations are successfully repealed, the new rates will result in true perpetual radio silence for thousands of online radio stations, a loss for rights holders, distributors, and consumers alike. In 1998, internet radio was added into the copyright law via inclusion in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, our old friend, the DMCA. Currently, webcasters running music-based radio stations pay an annual fee plus 12% of the station's profits. If only they could share in the losses, too, then we might actually be ahead in this game. So, yeah, we have to pay a fee, and we don't have any profits, so obviously we don't pay anything there. And that all gets paid to the music industry's royalty collection organization, known as Sound Exchange. Weren't those the people that couldn't find various popular artists to pay them? I'm not sure if they were the same people, but it was incredible. There was a list of all these artists that everybody was familiar with that they couldn't find, and they couldn't pay them their royalties. Unbelievable. These rates are applied evenly throughout the industry. Media giants such as Yahoo pay the same organization pursuant to the same calculation as the smaller independent webcasters serving a tiny niche audience. The rates are not only manageable, but they have enabled phenomenal growth in a relatively new industry. An estimated 70 million people regularly consume internet radio. That's right, you're consuming us if you're listening to us on the internet. And this number has been growing steadily. To serve this audience, there are literally tens of thousands of online radio stations available in the U.S. alone. Tens of thousands, wow. It's amazing it can be heard at all. What changed and why? The answer is that the Recording Industry Association of America, our other friends, the RIAA, naturally sought to be better compensated from the revenues of this booming industry. Webcasters and others with an interest in keeping the rates low strongly opposed the change. Nevertheless, the RIAA successfully lobbied for a rate hike. On March 2nd of this year, the Copyright Royalty Board, known as the CRB, one of their secret meetings, issued its ruling on the matter. Now, the CRB is a panel of three retired judges established in May 2005. You got to give them something to do, right? Can't have retired judges wandering around the malls. It could get dangerous. Empowered by Congress to determine royalty rates for broadcast material, the ruling said that public broadcasters must pay webcasting royalties in the same manner as commercial broadcasters do. The panel also declared that royalty rates will increase by approximately 30% in each of the next 2 years. In addition, each station must now pay an annual per-station administrative fee of $500. And further, as noted above, the new rates, though effective on July 15th of this year, will be applied retroactively to January 1st, 2006. All in all, this translates to what is, at a minimum, a whopping 300 to 1,200% royalty rate increase. So you see, it's a bit of a problem. And as a result, not only must every public radio webcaster pay crippling royalty rates, each must also endure the burden of increased record-keeping and reporting requirements and carefully consider whether to participate in expensive copyright tribunals and CRB hearings to challenge the ratings policy. My God. This is the price of greed. The result of the rate hike will vary depending on the size of the webcaster. Nevertheless, regardless of size, virtually all parties with a stake in the industry stand to lose. Unsurprisingly, small webcasters will suffer the most. Indeed, due to the rate's retroactivity, an estimated 90% of online radio stations will be bankrupt on July 15th, that is, when the rates go into effect. To illustrate, a relatively small webcaster may currently struggle to pay its $10,000 per year bill to Sound Exchange. Under the new regulations, that annual fee will go up to close to $700,000. This harms all parties, as the station will be forced to shut down, the consumer will no longer be able to enjoy the service, and the artist whose music is played will no longer be able to collect any royalties at all for distribution, as a previous distribution channel no longer exists. Larger webcasters, in contrast, may not be driven out of business, but they too will suffer. Not only are these companies now responsible for exorbitant royalty rates for services delivered since the beginning of 2006, but the quality of the service they deliver will suffer for lack of diversity, and as a result, consumers may pursue their music via alternative and often pirated sources. To illustrate, numerous large media and technology companies such as Yahoo, Real Networks, AOL, and Live 365 offer internet radio to their consumers. Many of these companies distribute personalized radio services in addition to their pre-programmed stations. This means that a user can create their own station based on a few select artists. As a result of offering personalized stations, companies such as Real Networks can easily offer over 400,000 stations in a year. Now, however, such companies will be charged a $500 administrative fee per station, plus per play rates. The annual administrative fee alone will thus come to about $200 million per company, and again, retroactively, will raise the fee even higher. You know, if these guys could figure out a way to make you pay every time you heard a song, I mean, not only when you play it in your own CD player or in your car or something like that, but actually when you're walking down the street and you hear something being played in a store or in someone else's house, if they could figure out a way to make you pay every single time, they would do it. If they could charge you for whistling a tune, they would do it. There is no limit. There is no limit to what they want. They want as much as they can get. They are the perfect American. always grabbing, always wanting more. And never realizing when is enough. And not even realizing also that your quality of life suffers as a result of this. Okay, let me get off my soapbox and get back to this article. The upshot, say goodbye to personalized radio stations. With little or no revenue tied to this service, these companies are sure to remove them. Again, the webcaster, the artist, and the consumer all lose out. And again, illegal online music sources may fill the gap, providing services that once were legally offered, but now are prohibitively expensive to offer legally. How can this lose-lose-lose situation be explained? One answer may be the law often lags perilously behind technological and creative innovation. In a perfect world, our intellectual property laws would support and encourage invention, innovation, and creativity, while sufficiently protecting intellectual property and adequately rewarding the creator. There are, of course, numerous examples of where this goes terribly wrong, and this is one of them. This is clearly a case where the law failed to serve its purpose. When an effort to obtain more revenue from a channel legitimately threatens simply to eliminate the channel in its entirety, something has gone terribly wrong. So what will happen next? Protesting webcasters now hope to benefit from the public outcry on the issue, and also, as noted above, hope they will obtain at least a temporary reprieve with a stay from the Court of Appeals. From tiny garage-based radio stations to publicly traded multinational corporations, there has been widespread opposition to the rate hikes. As a result, there are two bipartisan bills making their way through Congress. If either bill is enacted into law, it would better align internet radio royalty fees with those applied to the satellite radio industry, saving at least some webcasters from having to shut down. Regardless of what happens in coming weeks, let's hope that we have all learned from an obvious and painful mistake this time around. The current rate hike is untenable and was foolish. Now we need to work hard to figure out a livable compromise. That's an article from Cecily Mack. A look at radio silence when copyright law reform goes terribly wrong, and part of today's day of silence on the Internet. Let's hope it actually means something. If you want more information on this, would like to get involved, visit SaveNetRadio.org. That's right, SaveNetRadio.org. There's a whole big thing about what's going on their site. They say there, you are being heard. The incredible number of net radio listeners trying to contact their congressional representatives today has resulted in minor delays. Please continue to, I don't know what they mean, delays in what exactly, maybe in Congress, that would be good, I guess. Please continue to enter your zip code under the contact information on the webpage. Find out who your elected official is, their phone number, their address, everything, and contact them. SaveNetRadio.org. The future of Internet radio is in immediate danger. All right. Well, that's just one of many things that's in immediate danger. And we're here to let you know about all sorts of them. The first, of course, the major news of the day. Yes, she's back. She's out of jail again. I don't understand it. 2 weeks ago, we were talking about this, about how she was sent into prison. I don't have to say her name, do I? I don't have to say her name. You know who I'm talking about. That information is already in your head, just like it's already in my head. Don't you think you should be able to charge a fee to somebody for storage of that information inside your head? They bombard you with this information. You don't want it there. You never asked for it, yet it's there. You know who I'm talking about. Anyway, she got out of jail early this morning. And, of course, here's another bit of information. Her first interview is tomorrow night on the Larry King Show. Why do I know that? Why do I know this information? How do I get it out of my head? Can we have an exorcism of some sort just to get this useless information out of our brains? It's totally crazy. Now, 2 weeks ago, she got sent in for 23 days. Now, I know she can't add, but I can add, all right? And that's 14 days. And she was only in a couple of days before that. And yeah, it was supposed to be, what, a 44-day sentence? And of course, they chopped it in half for whatever reason. Fine, they do that. It seems like she missed a few days somewhere. So now she's frolicking about and getting all the attention that we predicted here she would get when she got out. It's a terrific publicity blitz. It's the best thing that could happen to whatever career she happens to be in. I still haven't figured that out. As some people have said, she's famous for being famous. You know what? I'm not going to say her name. I'm not going to say her name tonight. I'm just not going to do it. And I encourage all the other media outlets out there to shut up already about this. Enough. Do your job. Do your job and cover actual news. Looking at the front page of today's CNN, what's the first story? Okay, you know, it's a tragedy when people are found dead in their homes, and this professional wrestler apparently decided to kill his family, having something to do with steroids. The headline is, Steroids Found at Wrestler's House of Death. So now we got a steroid story, a wrestling story, and a murder story, all in one. It's great. I know. It sells papers and gets headlines and makes people watch TV. It's sad. It is news, but it's not the most important story in the country, nor is that poor housewife who was missing. The pregnant housewife was eventually found murdered, and her cop husband, boyfriend, whatever, was charged with her murder. Okay, you know, that's an interesting story, too. But it's more like a local story. It's more like a tragedy for a community rather than something the entire country follows nonstop. I turned on the TV the other day, and I have TiVo, and it was on CNN. And what TiVo allows you to do, you can skip backwards and see what you missed over the last 40 minutes or so. And it's handy. When you have a news station on, they might not be covering the headlines right now, but you can go back and see what the headlines were whenever it is that they went over them. And I went back 40 minutes, and the whole time, all 40 minutes of it, was devoted to the search for this housewife. Yeah, it's a story. It's something that people are somewhat interested in, but it's not the only story. Do you know how many things are going on in the world? How many important issues aren't being discussed because we're fixated on one? We're fixated on people who are famous for being famous? We're fixated on horrible tales of murder and all sorts of other things? There's so many different happenings going on in the world. We try to cover them here, but I just get very frustrated when major media just misses it all. All right. The most important thing I think people listening to this show this week can do in the immediate future. Actually, maybe I should clarify that, because obviously contacting your elected representatives about the webcasting thing, that's the most important thing you can do right now. But, okay, how about this weekend, the most important thing you can possibly do? All right? Yeah. This weekend, the most important thing those of you listening to this show can do, and those of you not listening to this show, please, listeners, talk to those people as well. Go see the film Sicko, the new Michael Moore film. I saw it last week. Saw it last Friday. Somehow I was able to get into a one-day showing in New York City, and Michael Moore was there. He showed up and gave a little talk in front of the audience. That was a nice little surprise there. And this is a film about the state of healthcare in our country. Now, it's not about the people who don't have health care. It's about the people who do have health care and how they are victimized, how they wind up having treatment denied, how they wind up losing their homes, how they wind up suffering as a result of an industry gone mad. And in typical Morris style, the film retains humor in telling a very serious story. He goes throughout the world showing differences, the way things are in other countries, such as Canada, France, England, even Cuba. And I have to say, after this thing was over, the audience was simply stunned. And it was like 1 o'clock in the morning when it was over. And I walked outside, and there were all these people talking to each other about what they had just seen, talking about issues of healthcare, comparing stories. It really opened up some eyes. And that's why it's so important to see this, because you'll realize what's going on in the rest of the world, what's going on here, and how our system is so broken, so corrupt, and so harmful to all of us. The best thing you can possibly do is go out with a bunch of people, see this film, talk about it, get other people to see it. I know a lot of you have been downloading it on the internet, and I know Michael Moore is not too unhappy about that, but it would be a shame if that meant you weren't going to go and see it in a theater with people. And if you don't feel like seeing it in a theater with people, buy somebody a ticket. A friend of mine did that, downloaded it a couple of weeks ago, and was so moved by the film that he said, I'm going to go out and I'm going to give tickets to strangers who weren't going to see this film in the first place to get them to see it. It could well be the most important film of the year, maybe even of our lifetimes, because it really wakes you up. And everyone's got a story. Everyone knows somebody who has been screwed over by the HMOs, by their insurance plans. This does not even take into account the people who don't have insurance at all. Recently, we heard the story of a woman who died in the emergency room when she was being ignored by hospital staff. No doubt if she had a better insurance policy, that would never have happened. The story in the film of someone who lost two fingers was given the choice of which one to reattach because he couldn't afford to reattach both of them. After all the deductibles and copays were handed out. A lot of us think we have good policies, too. A lot of us think we're covered, and usually those people are the ones who are fairly healthy and don't have a lot of medical problems. Eventually that changes, and when it does, that's when you wake up and see that you don't really have the coverage you think you have. This whole pre-existing condition thing, that's madness right there. If you have, God forbid, you have a pre-existing condition of some sort, some health-related issue, you can't get insurance. I don't even understand I understand their logic behind it. I don't know how they get away with it. It just basically means sick people can't get health insurance, even though they're paying through the nose for it. All right, so Sicko is the film. Spread the Word opens, I believe, on Friday nationwide, and simply incredible. It will leave you stunned, and I'm just very happy somebody had the guts to do this. All right, what else is going on? We have some other bad news. I know, it's always bad news, isn't it? But this is something that really really kind of annoys me a lot. I'm going to play you a sound, all right, if I can do this without messing it up too badly. All right, can I do this? Without messing it up too badly, we'll see. All right, this is a sound that you may have heard once in the past, but I'll bet you haven't heard it in a while. In fact, maybe those younger members of the audience have never heard this. Listen carefully. All right, it sounded just like a few birds there, but no, in particular, there was one bird in there known as a Bob White. You can sort of hear what sounds like the words Bob White being said by a bird. Right there. And I've heard that sound many times throughout my life, but apparently that is one of many birds that are disappearing. Yeah, they're disappearing. The National Audubon Society has sounded a call of concern. Some of the nation's most common bird species are in steep decline. Certain populations are down as much as 80% over the past 40 years. 80%. Folks, this is not just a theory anymore. This is really happening. It's happening as a result of us destroying the environment around us. Look around you. Look at your neighbors. Look at the people driving on the highways. Do you think that's not having an effect? Our supersized society is screwing with the environment all around us in a very permanent and deadly way. There's another bird. Now this one I have to bring up on the computer, so hopefully this will work. It's quite possible it won't, but let's try it. That is the sound of a whippoorwill, and that's another bird that apparently is disappearing as well. Data covering 550 bird species has been collected by Audubon since 1967. We looked at the 40-year trends, and we looked at the first time at what is happening in the 48 contiguous states. Species such as bobwhite quail, we've lost over 80% that were around 40 years ago. They are much less common in the northeast states. If you hear either of these birds, I want to hear about it. I want to know. I want to know where they are. It's so sad to think that a species like that is just disappearing. The top 20 common bird species nationally identified as being in decline by the report are northern bobwhite, evening grosbeak, northern pintail, greater scalp, boreal chickadee, eastern meadowlark, that is, common tern, loggerhead shrike, field sparrow, grasshopper sparrow, snow bunting, black-throated sparrow, lark sparrow, common grackle, American bittern, rufous hummingbird, whippoorwill, horned lark, little blue heron, and the ruffed grouse. Scott Wiedensahl, a nationally renowned naturalist and writer, said, "I can remember falling asleep to calls of the bobwhite quail and waking to the whippoorwill. And today, it's much harder to find them." I've got a bird outside my window. This is kind of an interesting story. I first noticed this last year. Basically, there's a small tree literally right outside the window I sleep. In fact, when I lie down, my head is probably a few inches away from this. And this bird has decided that's where he's going to hang out all day long. And last year, I just remember hearing this bird chirping away merrily all day long. It was what some people might consider an annoyance, I considered a privilege. That I was so close to real wildlife that it was a few inches away from me. And yeah, it's a pain in the ass to fall asleep sometimes if you stay up really, really late and it's dawn and this bird decides he's going to greet the dawn and keep at it for the next 10 hours or so. And I was really, really happy when I heard that familiar sound this spring. It means that wherever he had gone to over the winter, he had come back to the very same tree. And birds live for several years, at least. So he could be around for some time to come. Now, I know that we're programmed to modify the environment to make life as easy as possible for us. And that it's not uncommon to do things like, chop down the tree so the bird doesn't go there anymore, or just kill the bird. There are cases where people pave over their entire backyards because they don't like insects or because they don't want any wildlife around. This kind of sick behavior has an effect. Instead of learning to adapt to the planet that we are on. There are lots of neighborhoods around here that now have deer. And the reason they have deer is because they've been driven out of other neighborhoods because of all the destruction that has gone on to their habitat. All the McMansions that have to be built. All the highways that have to lead to them. All the ground paved over. All the trees knocked down. And yeah, so the deer go someplace else. Not as good an environment for them, but it's something. But now the people are up in arms. Oh my God, there's deer everywhere. I could get a deer tick. What are we going to do? We have to kill the deer. There's no other alternative. Never mind that we've existed with all these animals for millennia. Can't handle it now. No, we have to destroy it all in order to maintain our closed-minded ways of life. Rather than trying to learn something new, learn a new way of adapting, no, we want to bring what we're used to wherever it is that we go. If we move from the city out to the country, we want to bring the city with us. And we don't want any of that country surrounding us. So we destroy as much of it as possible. We cut down the trees. We pave over the grass. And we eliminate as much wildlife as possible. Well, friends, what happens in the end, we wind up digging our own graves. The ecological system works within itself. And you mess with one part of it, the rest of it falls apart as well. I guarantee you, we will see the effects of this, and we will feel it in a very, very bad way. Unless we do something. Yeah, something else we need to get involved with, something else we need to do. If you're currently in a project that involves destruction of the land, cutting down trees, or putting yet another house up where there are plenty that already exist, or if you're buying a huge vehicle that belches smoke into the air and gets about 10 miles to the gallon, if you're on the precipice of doing something like that, I want you to think about it. Think again. And try to make a different decision. Because something like that might actually save a species or two. It just really hit me when I read that these birds I've been familiar with all my life, they're disappearing in my lifetime. This is not something that's taking place over centuries or thousands of years. This is happening within decades. And it just really angers me and annoys me when people say, well, you know, we don't really know that humans are responsible for this, and global warming's just a theory, evolution's just a theory, and I'm going to be the biggest polluter of my neighborhood and feel proud about that. This really gets me angry. It also gets me angry when people don't do enough about it. Like Democrats, for instance. In their weekly radio address on Saturday, Democrats called for a new direction in energy policy, away from gas-guzzling automobiles and reliance on foreign oil. Bravo. What are they proposing? They're proposing a bill that would require automakers to increase the fuel economy of new cars, sport utility vehicles, and pickups, beginning not this week, not next week, and yeah, not next month either. Do you know when? Next year! Yeah, in your dreams. No, not next year either. 2020, that's when. That's when they have to start meeting the new standards. Do you know what those new standards will be? 36 miles per gallon for cars and 30 miles per gallon for SUVs and pickups. Oh, this is by 2025. They have to start by 2020, and by 2025 they have to get 36 miles per gallon for cars. Do you know the car that I bought in 1994 gets better gas mileage than that? And it's still running today. How do these people live with themselves? That is considered revolutionary. Boosting the mileage to something so pathetic as that and waiting until 2025 to actually accomplish it. So sad, so pathetic. One other thing I wanted to ask a favor, actually. The bird that I was just talking about, the one that sits by my head and wakes me up every morning, and I'm so happy he's there. I really am. It's sort of a reminder that there's life, this other life besides all the humans I have to deal with. And I like seeing deer running around and rabbits and pheasants and fox and whatever else we still have here on Long Island. Thank God we do. But every time somebody builds another house, there's that much less of it. Every time a road is expanded to another lane, there's that much less of it. Every car that drives around, it's so sad. That's why we have to really immediately start changing our lifestyles. But the bird, I recorded him a little earlier because I don't know what kind of bird this is. I looked out the window and just to see who was making all that racket. It's this little tiny bird. And he didn't move when I opened up the window. He just looked at me and said, "Yeah, can I help you?" In his eyes, he said that. And just continued twittering away with the racket that he makes all day long. Now, I'm sure there are bird watchers out there who listen to the show, bird experts. Maybe you can tell me by writing to otw@2600.com what kind of bird this is. Kind of gets into your spine, doesn't it? Yeah, all day long, I hear that sound, and it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. I mean, okay, it bothers me a little bit when I'm trying to fall asleep, and this sound is constantly in the back of my head. But people adapt to city life as well. I was at a friend's house the other day in the city, and he happens to live right above a bar. Now, you can imagine what that's like on a weekend. The noise, the incredible sound of drunken people shouting and stammering and attempting to sing, it makes the bird seem microscopic in comparison. And yet, people adapt to that. People adapt to car horns and airplanes flying over and all this other nonsense that we're constantly forced to deal with. So I think we can deal with some birds. What do you think? Okay. We have lots of birds here. We have all sorts of bird sound effects. But I think the real ones are starting to go to sleep. Somebody sent this. This link here, which I find to be incredible. This is a document. This is a document. By the way, I guess I should give out the phone number, 631-632-9872. That's 631-632-WUSB. Those of you out there in the local listening area, give us a call. I guess you don't need to dial the 631. And if you're listening on the Internet, I don't know how you're doing it, but I think you're probably listening in the future. Okay, the story that I saw here had to do with the FBI restricting student freedoms. And basically, it goes like this. U.S. university students will not be able to work late at the campus, travel abroad, show interest in their colleagues' work, have friends outside the United States, engage in independent research, or make extra money without the prior consent of the authorities, according to a set of guidelines given to administrators by the FBI. Federal agents are visiting some of New England's top universities, including MIT, Boston College, and the University of Massachusetts, to warn university heads about the dangers of foreign spies and terrorists stealing sensitive academic research. Got a loud one here. FBI is offering to brief faculty, students, and staff on what it calls espionage indicators aimed at identifying foreign agents. Now, got the document right here, and you can find it yourself. I believe that's a bird of prey, although it sounds like an entire kindergarten being murdered, which I guess you can get away with if you happen to be in a place where birds of prey hang out. Oh, kind of blood-curdling there. If he was nesting on the tree in back of my head, it might be a different story, but not likely. All right, I'll be happy when you go away. Thank you. This particular government site is www.ncix.gov. You ever hear of that one? ncix.gov. And if you go to the archives page, www.ncix.gov/archives, you'll see the very document that I'm about to read from. Oh, and by the way, NCIX stands for National Counterintelligence Executive. Who in God's name is that? Okay, I'll tell you quickly who that is, and then we'll get on to the actual meat of the matter here. The National Counterintelligence Executive serves as the head of National Counterintelligence, otherwise known as CI, for the United States government, and is directly responsible to the Director of National Intelligence. The NCIX facilitates and enhances U.S. counterintelligence efforts and awareness by enabling the CI community to better identify, assess, prioritize, and counter intelligence threats from foreign powers, terrorist groups, and other non-state entities. Ensuring the CI community acts efficiently and effectively, and providing for the integration of all U.S. counterintelligence activities. The NCIX chairs the National Counterintelligence Policy Board, the principal interagency mechanism for developing national CI policies and procedures, and heads the Office of the National Counterintelligence Executive. All right, so now you know that. Here's a little bit of what they what they're all about here as far as getting universities to cooperate. There is no established formula for recognizing that someone is involved in espionage. This much can be seen even in a brief review of many of the espionage cases against the United States, which have occurred over past years. However, certain situational factors or suitability issues can make an individual predisposed to volunteer or spy, or volunteer to spy, that is, or vulnerable to exploitation by foreign intelligence officers. According to the 2002 Perserex study, most known American spies, 80% of them, demonstrated one or more conditions or behaviors of security concern before they turned to espionage. Reporting suitability issues is a protective or preventive measure that can help to head off a developing problem that could lead to spying for foreign governments. So, basically they're encouraging you to look out for these people. They say while reports of behaviors of security concern or personal crises by coworkers have led to the apprehension of some American spies, reluctance to report these issues has also allowed other spies to persist in their crimes. Okay, so what should we look out for? Potential espionage indicators. The fact that an individual exhibits one or more of these indicators does not automatically mean that he or she is engaged in espionage. Let's just make that clear. However, based upon the situation, such factors can be cause for concern and might merit further investigation to determine whether espionage is a possibility. We should report observations of one or more of the following indicators pertaining to a person with access to classified information. Unexplained affluence. Failing to report overseas travel. Showing unusual interest in information outside the job scope. Keeping unusual work hours. Taking classified material home. Unreported or concealed contacts with foreign nationals. Unreported contact with foreign government, military, or intelligence officials. Attempting to gain new accesses without the need to know. And unexplained absences. Now, you can make a difference. If you want to do these people a favor who have problems, and I'm talking from experience. This is Jeffrey Carney, U.S. Air Force, convicted spy. If somebody had said something to me and put a block in front of me and said, I think Jeff's got a problem, and I don't think that he's handling it very well, that would have been enough to stop the process. Apathy, disbelief, or fear of reprisal can cause us to look away rather than confront troublesome behavior. But looking the other way from suitability and CI issues can pose a risk to an individual's well-being, as well as to our mission and national security. Now, reporting a concern about a coworker can be an emotional and difficult task. As Americans, we're taught to respect others' privacy. Distrust of bureaucracy may lead some to believe that authorities will overreact. We may choose to avoid uncomfortable situations and not report information if there is a chance that others will discover the source. However, keep in mind that the Privacy Act allows individuals who provide information to investigators to request confidentiality. We all experience emotional factors that may influence our willingness to report derogatory information about a coworker. Problems arise when these feelings prevent us from fulfilling our responsibilities to our organization, our nation, and our colleagues. The following are examples of some common attitudes and beliefs that may hinder us from reporting potentially significant suitability or CI issues. By understanding these factors, we can go beyond them and see them as the excuses they really are. Social influences. I should mind my own business and not get involved. Transfer of responsibility. Someone else will report it. It's not my job. His supervisor should report it. Fear of reaction. If I report it, they will either ignore it or blow it out of proportion. Conflict and confidentiality. If people find out or deduce that I reported information, no one will trust me and the working environment will be tense. Disbelief. I can't believe that Helen would do something like that. I've worked with her for years, and she's as loyal as you and I. Shouldn't it be as you and me? I think I got that wrong. And finally, fear of being paranoid. I'm being paranoid. There's nothing wrong with John. I must be overreacting, and my paranoia will do nothing but get him into trouble. The emotional trials we just described can cause us to feel stress and anxiety. Armed with an understanding of what they mean, we can challenge these factors and overcome them in order to make the rational decision to report the person. So, there's all sorts of things to look out for. If somebody that you work with is argumentative or insulting towards work associates, that could be something right there. Tends to isolate self, rejects any social interaction, apparent lack of social supports, unexplained and manifested depression. Very suspicious. Verbal outburst, usually drawing attention of those not directly involved in the exchange. And there's just so many things here. Calls at work from creditors, denial of credit, bounced checks, bankruptcy. Living or spending beyond one's apparent means, unexplained or sudden large sums of cash. Personal possessions inconsistent with salary? Or, how about this, unreported contacts with foreign intelligence services, foreign governments or organizations, unauthorized persons seeking classified information? And yeah, classified information, that's a concern, but a lot of things can be classified that aren't necessarily that classified. It's a very loosely loosely used term. And we're talking about a university environment here. This is where this is being passed out to. Anyway, if you want to read the whole thing yourself, go to www.ncix.gov/archives. Look for your role in combating the insider threat. And, yeah, as the bird laughs at us. You know, it's that time again. I'm sorry. It's already time for us to go. And we just barely scratched the surface. Didn't take any phone calls. I don't think we got any phone calls. Didn't read any letters. Didn't complain about half the things I wanted to complain about. Well, at least we got the word out about some things. So, yeah, keep an eye for the environment, for freedom, for that kind of thing. Save the birds. Save the planet. Save yourself. And do write to us, OTW at 2600.com. We'll see you tomorrow night at OTH. And next week here. Good night.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.